Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, June 4th, welcome, friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett.
So America turns 250 years old in just weeks. And of course, Philadelphia, the birthplace of the nation, is the epicenter of the celebration. But the city is also expecting huge crowds thanks to the FIFA World Cup matches, MLB All-Star Week, and of course, we have our huge July 4th festivities.
Mm-hmm.
The question is Philly ready for all that is to come? City officials say, of course, we're ready. Critics say, maybe not. So today on the show, we have the guy who runs Philadelphia 2026, which is knee deep in the plans for the city. He's going to be on the show. We also have the editor, one of the editors of Philly Mag, who will talk about what the people can expect, what it'll look like in terms of security, crowds, events, and more. And, you know, a burning question about what will be left when all of this is over. Right. Because years ago, we got the Ben Franklin Bridge. Right. Mm-hmm. 100 years ago, as part of the nation celebration, we got Love Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, what are we going to get this time? So we have a lot of questions on the show. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. Are you excited to celebrate Philadelphia's 250th? Will you be participating in any of the festivities going around? Share your thoughts by calling 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're on Facebook or YouTube, you can leave your comments in the live chat. And by the way, in the final segment of today's show, we're going to play one of our live events as part of Studio 2's Tavern 250 tour, right? We were in Haddonfield, New Jersey.
Beautiful Haddonfield.
Just last week, talking about New Jersey's participation in the revolution.
Indeed. It's also DJ of the Day.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a Thursday. So we will end the show with a song picked by one of you related to the theme of today's show. I don't know. Birthdays, America.
Anniversaries.
The number 250. Whatever you suggest, send it on in. I believe producer Hazel is picking the winner today.
Yeah.
The email address is studio2@whyy.org. Get your submissions in by 12:30. Again, that's studio2@whyy.org. But first, a trio of local news stories. Big news out of City Hall this morning. Philadelphia's City Council will approve a budget that does not include Mayor Parker's proposed $1 per ride tax on Uber and Lyft. That is according to the Inquirer. The budget also does not include the proposed fee on delivery services that would have gone toward pothole repair. This is a big political setback for Parker. It could also mean trouble for the school district of Philadelphia. The district plans to eliminate over 300 classroom positions to help fill a $300 million budget deficit triggered by the expiration of COVID-era funds.
Yeah.
So money from the proposed rideshare fee would have gone toward preserving some of those positions. Now it's very unclear what will happen.
Yeah, a lot to talk about there. I mean, not a good week for
Mayor Parker.
First, her hotel tax solution to fund homelessness prevention got no support from Harrisburg, or got very little support from
not
Harrisburg.
Enough.
Yeah, and now the rideshare tax to fund schools is cut. I wonder what her pivot or plan B will be to take on those two priorities. There's also, I know there's been some growing frustration over affordability in the city, right? And I've been monitoring this hunger strike by some members of a progressive group called Sunrise Movement, turning up the pressure around this budget. So I don't know if that's part of it, but, you know, I mean, she's got to pivot. Last year, the big thing was housing. This year, it's sort of, you know, these taxes and so
school funding.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Now, look, you're getting a little deeper into your administrative tenure right now as mayor. Early on, it tends to be a little easier to get everyone to sort of play along. You get deeper into these things. And all of a sudden, there's a little bit of dissent. Not totally surprising, but like you said, not a great week for the mayor and her legislative priorities.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, on council's agenda today, Philly is looking into a plan to install hundreds of curbside EV chargers over the next decade.
Oh, that's a good thing. This
just
could be good.
Note that. It's a partnership with a pair of private companies. The companies would actually cover most of the cost. for installation and maintenance. If all goes well, we're looking at over 800 chargers installed across the city over the next 10 years. So something to track as well.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to that. So second story, a novel use of a type of cancer therapy invented at University of Pennsylvania is offering a Philadelphia man a chance at an organ transplant. He actually had the transplant. Nice write-up by Kayla Yupp for the Philadelphia Inquirer about this breakthrough. The therapy is called CAR-T and was developed by Penn to supercharge one's immune system to help fight cancer. It has been used very successfully to take on blood cancers like leukemia, but has not found a lot of success against solid cancers. Well, 5 years ago, a Penn transplant surgeon decided to use the therapy to help the patients in need of organ transplants who are, quote, sensitized, that is, have immune systems that are more likely to reject an organ. This is about 30% of the people who need an organ.
Wow, so it's a big number.
Big number. So they ran a clinical trial, and early results shows that CAR-T can help desensitize these patients. And so far, it's helped a Philadelphia man who's been on the kidney transplant list for years, as well as another Penn patient successfully receive new organs. And this trial could work on 10 other patients. So
amazing.
Huge breakthrough.
Amazing. Amazing. And just such a reminder of how science works. Like, we often think of someone trying to cure a disease and there being like a discrete problem and a discrete solution. But when you're doing research like this, you are discovering how different biological mechanisms mm-hmm. work in the body and how to manipulate those mechanisms. And that can become the bedrock for so many other future applications and discovery. So here you have a cancer treatment being used in the arena of organ transplant, right? And it's because when you're doing research, you're not just following a discrete path. You are opening up new pathways.
Yes. And the thing is, this treatment had been sitting around for about 15 years. They had known about it for years. It had been used in cancer treatments. But then it didn't. There was no new developments there. But then
it
this,
takes some time.
5 years ago, boom, this opened up.
It's like the story of mRNA. You know, they had that floating around for a while. Then all of a sudden, there was a COVID crisis and they put it into action into a way they couldn't have conceived of when they were first, you know, tinkering with the idea. And now there's the thought that mRNA technology could be used in all sorts of other ways, right? So it's just like that's the beauty of science. It's iterative, and it's just a great reminder here from what we're seeing right here in the city of Philadelphia.
And that's what I was going to say. Like, we always forget, like, how lucky we are to be in Philadelphia. This patient, lucky to be in Philadelphia and be one of the first people to have this treatment. And he had been on the transplant list going through, you know, getting, you know, I mean, doing dialysis for years.
Yeah.
4 years. So
hat tip to the researchers over at Penn. Final story.
Mm-hmm.
South Philadelphia connoisseurs of old format media, rejoice.
All right.
Rejoice. Because a video and DVD rental store is on the verge of coming to East Passyunk Avenue. It's called Little Movie Store.
Cute name.
According to Philly Voice, it's in the final stages of securing a storefront on the popular shopping strip. Little Movie Store has more than 20,000 titles. They've built this thing piecemeal. Kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are through personal donation. Others garage sales, eBay, Facebook, etc. And they got to 20,000 total DVDs and VHSs and Blu-rays. It's going to be a membership model, but you can get a free membership if you donate to the collection. And by the way, if you're wondering how long it's been since we had a Blockbuster here in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
2013.
Wow.
It's been 13 years. So now all of a sudden, you know, these things come back around. It's cyclical, and it looks like Little Movie Store thinks there's an opportunity here for people who want to pop in a VHS or a DVD.
Well, I will say there is this nostalgia for tangible media now.
Sure.
You know, vinyl records, DVDs, CDs, cassette tapes. The only problem I see is that I think a lot of people don't have the device anymore. Like, I got rid of my device well over a decade ago.
And it used to be that, like, your MacBook would have a slot for it.
Not anymore. And I did some little research, because, you know, that's what I like to do.
You're a research maven.
And the DVD players, you can get them for, like, $25 online.
Oh,
not
it.
Bad. But if you want a VHS, it's going to cost you like $200+ because they have the kind that allow you to digitize everything. There's no more. You have to find it used, like an old VHS. The new ones have the digitization and they cost at least $200.
So if you've got an old VHS in your attic,
you're great. But if you don't
sell it,
yeah,
it's worth $200.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I guess so. There's a market for used VHS players.
By the way, on this same, I'd say it's on East Passyunk. On East Passyunk, there are already two vinyl shops. So it just shows you how these things come back around. So now there's going to be two vinyl shops and maybe a VHS store.
Now, I like love the sound of vinyl, though. I could see myself getting a record player because I just love the sound of vinyl.
You're a vinyl head?
I think it sounds really cool.
Come on over.
Come on over.
You want to hear
it? I think I got like two albums.
Well, I mean, I've got some. I could share.
You could share. Oh, that's so nice.
I didn't know you were a fan.
Yeah, I love the way it sounds.
You're an audiophile.
Yeah. It. You know.
What is it, the crackle?
I think it's a little bit of the crackle. It just feels very warm when you hear it.
Well, snap, crackle, will the 250 pop this year in Philadelphia? we're going to talk about it inside this break. We want your thoughts. What are you looking forward to about the 250 here in Philly, if anything? Maybe you're looking forward to it being over. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolf-Manera.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are exactly 1 month from the 250th birthday of America. But the celebration and the preparation has been happening for a while. Through the Parker administration's Ring It On campaign, the city is making investments throughout neighborhoods, hoping to, quote, boost civic pride, strengthen economies, and create a lasting impact.
In addition to Philadelphia's celebration of the 250th, the FIFA World Cup kicks off next week. Yeah, folks, it's coming. The MLB All-Star Game is coming to town for the first time in 30 years. No doubt this is an exciting summer for the city of Philadelphia.
But Avi, so many events coming together, drawing international attention, that comes with special challenges.
City officials like the one we're about to talk with say they are more than ready to meet the moment. But some critics say investments in infrastructure and beautification and overall preparation for 2026 was just too little too late. So today we're asking, is Philadelphia ready to celebrate America's birthday and all the overlapping events? Joining us in studio now is Bradford Pearson, executive editor of Philadelphia Magazine. Brad, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you both for having me.
Yes. Also with us is Michael Newmis, 2026 director for the city of Philadelphia. Michael, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And for you, our listeners on the road, at home, or elsewhere, our question of the day is, what are you looking forward to about the 250th celebrations? What will you be doing? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTube streamers, you can put your comments in the live chat.
Stan says, I am looking forward to the festivities and the reading of the Declaration of Independence and the parade, as well as the fireworks. And Mr. Man on Facebook says, Juneteenth is what we care about, and cookouts. So, Mike, I want to start with you. When we talk about preparation, what does it actually mean from your perspective? Like, what are the actual tangible things people are doing over the next month to prepare?
You know, so much of preparation starts years before you even read about it, years before even the media start talking about it. Preparation for, you know, some of the upcoming events like the FIFA World Cup include, how are our officers studying the cultures of the teams that will be here, right? How are we looking to make sure that if you see two teams lined up facing one another, that may look like aggressive behavior, but it's not actually. It's going to erupt in celebration, that we know how to engage with visitors that are coming. But so much of the preparation started years ago. It's around public safety infrastructure, transportation. And over the past 2 years, since the Parker administration came on board, it's really about how do we get the city ready in a bold, unified way, and how do we make sure that the benefits of the celebration reach neighborhoods that have historically been left out of the party.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how are those neighborhoods being reached? Give us a little rundown there.
Unlike celebrations of the past where, you know, you've got this tentpole event, let's say it's that little soccer game we know, or a major concert, we were really intentional about working across every single council district here in Philadelphia. And meeting with residents and businesses. And through that, we've identified over 20, not one, not two, but 20 commercial corridors that had some investment poured into them over the years, but never quite benefited from the economic benefits of tourism. And we've installed across those neighborhoods in partnership with the communities, some beautification schemes, right? Brand new benches, beautiful bells, adding brand new festivals and enhancing ones that are already there to make sure that we can drive folks out to visit outside of just Center City, But also, if you build it, they don't always come. So we've layered on things like tour series, where we're physically driving folks out to visit the neighborhoods, to discover the cultural assets, and to be a part of why Philadelphia is so special.
Yeah. And so give us a sense of scale, like how many agencies and organizations are currently involved?
There are countless organizations. Let's go through it. So if we look at the city's investments across community partners, over the past 2 years, there are well over 60 different organizations that will literally be kind of hosting festivities that we've worked with to invest. If you think about public safety, our public safety officials who wake up day and night and have the greatest track record of successfully hosting these events have worked with agencies across every level of government, across our shoulder counties, across SEPTA, across Amtrak, across every entity that you can imagine, in a coordinated way to make sure that we've got the right plan. Likewise, transportation, public safety, every single thing you can think of, there's different committees that are working across multiple partners to align.
And so my other question is about funding. Like, how much money went into this? And do you think it's been enough? Because I know that was something that a lot of people was talking about. Like, there hasn't been enough investment in this to make it as big as we've seen past celebrations be.
You know, I always look back to the day that within 6 months of this administration coming to the table, we were announcing $37.5 million. The headline was too little, too late. That was within 6 months. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that number was far exceeding what other cities had done at that time. And since that point period, now that we're almost 2 years out, we've poured in $120 million in investments across Philadelphia. And let me be clear, that's not just for bunting on a stage. Because the 250th birthday, the anniversary of the country, is not so much just about the events that you're seeing happen over the next few weeks. It's about leveraging this moment to be a springboard for the future. It's how do we leverage this anniversary to make strategic investments that help position the people of Philadelphia and our businesses for greater success in the future. That's why you're seeing things like the transformation of our highways and our gateways into city, right? 676, 95, because Cherry, Avi, you know you only get one chance to make your first impression, and we want to make the best impression. But it's also about civic pride. That's why you see Amtrak, the CSX wall being beautified, because that's a key artery, not just for visitors coming to FIFA, but also for business attraction when they're coming in to determine, do I want to move my employees and businesses here?
So, Brad, I want to bring you in the conversation now. Look, and Michael is part of the Parker administration. Parker administration is just coming in at the end of this entire process. I want you to talk a little bit about sort of before that, because you guys have done some reporting. There was quite a bit of turbulence at the local level and at the local slash national level among the planning committees that were putting this together. I would love to get your perspective on sort of that lead up to, let's say, the last couple of years or so.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, everything that Michael is saying is correct. I think that also that headline was also correct, that in some ways there was too little too late. I think that, you know, almost a decade ago, some of these sort of competing agencies were working, USA 250, what became Philadelphia 250, and they were sort of at odds. And then you had other groups, you had one of those groups that was sort of torn apart by allegations of sexism. And then you had the head of Philly 250 resigning just a year and a half ago.
Yeah, with December 2024.
So you have a lot of things that the city was really not a part of, unfortunately. And, you know, if you look back for all of these other centennial celebrations, all of these things, you had a real, you had 10 years, 15 years of planning that went into them, which led to, you know, as you said at the top, you know, the Please Touch Museum is a relic of the centennial celebration. The Mann Center is a a relic of the bicentennial celebration. So you have these real tangible ways for people and Philadelphians to experience the history of the 100th anniversary of America, the 200th anniversary of America.
From your perspective, how much of that could you peg to dysfunction or lack of or competing visions within the planning versus world events? Like, there was a pandemic.
There was
obviously.
In the middle of all of this.
I'm just like, when you talk about the scale, this versus last time, I'm just curious how you kind of try to differentiate between those as causes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, during the centennial celebration, we were just coming out of Vietnam too. So it's, you know, there are things that affect. And at the centennial celebration, we're just coming after the Civil War. So you have lots of things that are sort of always at odds with the history that you want to promote and the history that you want to create. And I think right now, again, like, I don't think that there's not one person here to blame. And I think that the celebration is going to be successful. I think it's also a really hard time right now for a lot of Americans to feel enthusiastic about celebrating America.
Yeah. We have a comment right here. Anne says, I had planned on celebrating the 4th. It's Philly after all, but the current state of living is making me rethink my choice.
Yeah. And so, Michael, I wanted to bring you back in and have you respond to that on two parts. And we could start with this whole idea, because that's been a comment that we've been seeing from some folks on Facebook, just sort of talking about, you know, how they feel about the country and, you know, political, you know, divisions and things like that, and makes it harder for them to want to celebrate. Your thoughts on that and how the city is countering that?
You know, I think one of the beautiful quotes that one of my favorite artists, Nina Simone, says is that, as far as I'm concerned, the role of an artist is to reflect the times. And throughout this moment, you know, over the past 2 years, I've been asked countless times, how do you inspire a spirit of celebration at a time when the country can feel fraught with this division? And we can't lose sight of that reality, but we also can't let it give us a reason to not embrace the role that we each have in this moment. That's why, as far as the city of Philadelphia is concerned, we've leveraged this moment to amplify voices, right? We're bringing out the fuller truth of American history. We're making sure that the voices of youth and our students are front stage with singing competitions like Sing That John that bring their voices in a bold way. We're making sure that every single element of public art that you see is informed by the communities and the stories that they want to share. We're making sure that we bring out, for the first time ever, permanent statues honoring Black women leaders like Harriet Tubman and Blanche Nick, Sadie Alexander. We're relocating the Joe Frazier story to tell more fuller history. We're bringing forth, through Indigenous voices, We Are the Seeds and Indigenous Indigenous Voices, brand new celebrations. We're addressing the times that we're in. We're even going into communities with the highest concentration of immigration through Breaking Bread, Breaking Barriers, and having civic dining series. There's so much more than just soccer, but what we're doing is really bring people a little bit closer together and reminding folks that no matter what times we are in, whether it's post-Vietnam War, whether it's the 2026 environmental context, that we each have agency to play in building the future. And the 250th is not just a celebration of where we are, but it's a calling to each of our responsibility and leaning in to this moment and being a part of the conversation for the future.
And I wanted to sort of follow up with also the idea that there's, because we got the Ben Franklin Bridge 100 years ago, right? We're going to be celebrating that. We got Love Park. We got the Mann Center. All of that was just mentioned by Brad. And so, and we've been talking about that. Are there, you know, what's the big thing that we're getting in Philly after this? Is there a big thing? Or do you think that because we had a pandemic, because we had so much going on politically, that that big thing isn't necessarily here this time?
You know, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today, Jerusalem Post, Forbes, every single national global outlet have all leaned in and say Philadelphia is the number one place, because they've looked at what we've got going on and they've said that we've got the right formula, right? Obviously, for so many destinations across the country, their plan includes maybe one tentpole event, right? Fireworks on July 4th. Obviously, ours has many. Not only do we have the biggest game in the world, the FIFA World Cup, we've got the world's game. We've got America's game with the MLB All-Star game. But we also have so much more. Mayor Parker just recently announced the largest free concert in America that will take place here in Philadelphia on July 4th. On July 3rd, we're going to have representatives from every single state here as we have the largest parade in Philadelphia history. On July 2nd, working backwards, because remember, our festival is a 16-day festival because it starts on Juneteenth. On July 2nd, we're going to have mayors from the entire country, small towns and big cities, coming to Philadelphia. They're going to march from City Hall down to the President's House, bear witness to the fuller history of this nation, take a class photo in front of Independence Hall, and then march into Museum of American Revolution for a nationally televised thought leadership conversation. And that, don't forget, we also have the national time capsule for the United States of America.
I wanted to ask you, Brad, though, bringing back to this conversation about like a physical legacy project and whether that would have was going to be part of this or not. There was a moment when it seemed like Ed Rendell, who is sort of behind the scenes of a lot of this, was trying to push for some sort of monument where the quote unquote spaceship is near City Hall. I just want you to peel back the reporting layers about whether there was or wasn't going to be sort of like a physical manifestation reminder of this event above ground, and like what sort of went into that from what you know.
Sure. Well, I know that, you know, former governor and former mayor Ed Rendell had been proposing this idea called the National Light, which was sort of a reflection of this is obviously a much different sort of monument. But after the trade centers went down, sort of a light that would be eternally shining right by City Hall. And the thing was, he just couldn't raise the money to do it. And, you know, if Ed Rendell can't do it here in Philadelphia.
Big Philly booster,
Right, yeah. And that's the thing that was kind of depressing. And I think, but that was another situation where the planning was going on and then the clock just ran out. And that's, you know, I think I'm probably coming across as sort of maybe a bit cynical or a critic of everything that's going on in the city. But I really think that so much of it just came down to time. Like, I think that the folks right now, like Michael and Catherine Ott Lovell and Angela Val and all the folks that are doing things around the city right now are doing great work. It was just, unfortunately, the folks that came before.
It was the front end is where you see there. And I am curious, though, like, just generally how you balance, like, the importance of having a physical legacy project like that versus what Michael's describing, which is lots of programmatic stuff, sort of like in the moment celebration.
And they're both valuable, right? Absolutely. I love that. And I, you know, I'm a South Philly resident. I'm excited to partake in a lot of these festivities. I also know that, you know, it's nice to walk around the city sometimes and see these things that remain. Like, there's a light post by my house that is painted with an American flag from the bicentennial. And that's something that I don't know if the city did or just a person did, but every time I walk by it, I think about how that came to be 50 years ago. And, you know, it's great that we're getting some benches. It's great that we're getting bike racks with 250 on them. I just, for me, I want something that I can really, you know,
so 50 years from now, when we celebrate the next milestone, that it would still be here.
300 years. And I want, you know, you know, maybe this is me being a bit of a Pollyanna, but like, you know, we got the Mann Center last time. We got the Mann Center at the bicentennial.
Something the South Philly Sports Complex is a relic of the 150. Yeah. That said, the 150 was also sort of, they spent way too much
way
money.
Too much money.
They couldn't afford it.
It was a whole bunch
so
of other
stuff. So there is a risk going.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, some of it is just an allocation of resources in this city.
Yeah.
And I mean, one thing that I would love, you know, Michael talked at the top about the beautification of the city. I'd have loved some 250 trash cans. I mean, for me.
Michael, can I get give you a chance to respond to this idea? Because I think what Brad was laying out there is this idea that he feels like in the last couple of years, actually, there's been some pretty heroic stuff to sort of bring this together, turn this into a celebration. But that there was some stuff earlier on, again, before you were involved.
That was
just not quite at the level of ambition and scale that he and some others would like to see. I am curious how you respond to that narrative.
I'd say I'm really encouraged talking with folks in the community, folks who don't always get the microphone, right? And hearing what they wanted to see for their 250th and what would be meaningful to them. You mentioned at the top of this, you know, the pandemics and some other factors. And right now, more than anything, I think people want to feel seen and heard and recognize that as democracy has this, you know, this arc, that their voice matters. We also mentioned Ed Rendell. And I'll tell you, as someone that has one of the first people I drove to the home of was Governor Rendell. And I was with him just this week as he unveiled the evolution of the National Light with a bunch of students from Kappa who were going to be shining their voices quite brightly. That he too is so encouraged by what Philadelphia has been able to pull together in just a short time. Now, in terms of legacy projects, you know, a lot of countries will have the Olympics or major cities, and they'll build these incredible institutions that may or may not serve them well over posterity financially. Of course, there were plans in place, plans being made, you know, there were different institutions looking at that from a lens. But we got in here, you know, the real need that Philadelphia has isn't necessarily a brand new museum, because we have quite a few. But we've got a lot of infrastructure right now in this year that needed a little love. So I'm really pleased to see that PAFA has, for the first time in many years, reopened their historic building as a result of the investments that were made for the 250th, that we've got capacity building for institutions that will be here for perpetuity, that we are bringing the world together and sharing a narrative of what it means to be Americans. And although infrastructure and shiny goods are good on Christmas, when we talk about planning the nation's birthday for the nation's birthplace, at a time when so many people feel like they, as Cherry said, don't want to celebrate, it's so important that we remind Americans of what it means to be Americans, and that we don't allow history to be erased, and that we lean into this moment in a bold, fresh way.
Yeah, you wanted to say something.
One thing I want to say about infrastructure investments, I think that the one thing that I've been thinking about for the last year is that the one thing that I would really love is just someone hose down every SEPTA station. Because that is an investment that invests in the moment, invests in World Cup travel, invests in the folks that are coming here for the 250. But it's also great for every single person that rides the subway, that gets on at Tasker Morris.
Sort of like what's for us in the day after.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah. That is sort of a lasting legacy too there, where if we invest in that sort of SEPTA infrastructure for this year, it bears fruit for years to come.
And just sort of change the ways that people view SEPTA and clean things
and
up.
And change the way that people view a lasting legacy. It doesn't have to necessarily be a building, but you come in and say like, and this is again, a statewide problem when it comes to SEPTA funding. So that's not on the city, but it's one thing that just seemed like such an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask about, and I, you know, forgive me if both of you guys don't know about this, but the South Street Pedestrian Bridge, which was supposed to be part of the CAP, there had been talk that that arch was going to be installed this summer in time for the 250th celebrations. It was supposed to be done. We talked about it on the show over a weekend. At night, and people were going to wake up and see this beautiful arch, and this was going to be an infrastructure change. Any thoughts on whether that's actually going to happen? I know that the actual bridge wasn't supposed to be complete until 2027. It's part of the 95 CAP project. Any ideas on this?
I mean, I can speak quick to it. I know that I think the CAP project's final date has been pushed to 2029. Mm-hmm. And that's a project that has been just sort of it's a great project.
Yeah,
it's a great project. I think that Joe Forkin and everybody that put that project together, it is, when I lived in Dallas, they capped a similar highway and it was completely transformational for the city. And I think it's going to be the same for Philadelphia, especially that sort of eastern edge of Market, Society Hill, even down to Queen Village. I'd love for the pedestrian bridge to.
And they had said 6 months ago, the last we heard was like in December that this was going to happen in June, but it's been crickets. So
yeah, you know, the CAP was definitely delayed because of the pandemic, right? And that work would have been an incredible place for so many activations. SEPTA just recently announced a brand new transit station that's now reopened for the first time in many years. It's gorgeous. It's got beautiful murals. They have doubled down on their investments, and the city has doubled down on cleaning and greening. I think there's a lot of progress that's been made, and it's encouraging to see it happen, and it's encouraging to see so many communities where that progress is being made. So it's transformative. You know, sometimes a bench is even more than a bench. I've got beautiful emails from the heads of BIDs and CDCs that are saying, in these areas where we have these concentrations of assets, that there's less littering, that there's more community. So much was planned, and of course you can't factor pandemics and other that always into your planning, and that does shift things, but we still have a lot to hang our hat on.
So we have built it, what we're going to build, and the question now is whether they will come.
Yeah.
And I am so curious about what you're both seeing out there in terms of tourism response. I have some numbers here. Billy Penn reported, our partners, May 6th, a Hotel Outlook report of the 11 World Cup host cities by the American Hotel and Lodging Association found that nearly 80% of Philadelphia hotels surveyed said booking pace was below expectation and behind a typical summer. I was looking at a website called AirDNA, where they track demand for short-term rentals in Philly. When you look at World Cup match days, demand is up like 9 to 19% in that range. But there is still some vacancy. Brad, we'll start with you. What do we know about tourism response, which, by the way, is affected by so many other things control here.
Outside of fuel prices.
What we expected.
Yeah. I think right now it's kind of a perfect storm of bad in terms of the things that are pressing against our tourism right now. Fuel prices, as Cherry said, but also a world that doesn't really want to travel to the United States right now for fear of immigration raids and lots of different things getting wrapped up in some sort of dragnet. And I think it's really unfortunate for folks who invested a lot of money in their hotels, in Airbnbs. If you look at ticket prices right now for a lot of the World Cup games, they're plummeting. People are talking about getting tickets day of because, you know, we couldn't afford that. I couldn't afford any of the World Cup tickets, but I'm watching them and monitoring them now, and they're plummeting. Mm. And I think that there was an assumed demand by FIFA, and, you know, I have my problems with FIFA as an organization.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a whole other
exactly.
show.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I think that the best thing that Philadelphia can do right now is we are a welcoming place. We're a welcoming city. And that's something that all four of us can agree on. And I think that the folks that do come might even get a better show because there's not as many of them coming.
Yeah.
What, but Mike, we also have a lens to make sure that our residents have the best experience too. So we're more than just welcoming. We also want to make sure, and as the New York Times said, why Philadelphia's World Cup is the envy of the world. And it is because it's more affordable to experience the magic, even if you don't have a ticket to the game.
And by the way, SEPTA Price is here.
It's a 39-day free festival. As you're about to, you know, SEPTA prices compared to $98 to go in New York City to get from downtown to the stadium, we're less than $3. It's a remarkable value proposition. And we want to make sure that our residents can experience that magic too.
Yeah. So real quick, though, Michael, are we seeing the booking demand that we expected to see?
You know, I can't speak for booking demand presently, but I will tell you, I could go on my phone and book a trip this weekend. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen over a period of time over, you know, even back when I was at Visit Philadelphia, is that the booking window is decreasing significantly. People are booking their trips with very little leeway. It could be 2 weeks to make a decision. I could book a trip for this weekend. So, you know, the hotels, the hospitality industry would speak for themselves on what they're seeing. But in terms of what the city's doing, we're just making sure that we can add the best possible value to make sure people can choose Philadelphia.
And so, you know, we only have about couple minutes before the show wraps up, the segment wraps up. But I just want to ask you, if you're a person, you're here, you want to like participate in this, Michael, if you were to say, okay, these are the three or four not miss, you got to bring your family to this. And here to what are those things? And quickly, yeah.
I'd say one, download the Access Philly app, which has so many events, everything you can imagine. We launched it a few weeks ago. It's getting thousands of new downloads every single week. We're about to, on July 11th, close down the Benjamin Franklin Bridge for a once-in-a-lifetime celebration.
I'm looking forward to that.
That's a good one. You're going. We haven't even announced the full lineup for July 4th, but it's going to be a major concert. It's going to be very unifying. It is the Unity Concert for America. And across every single neighborhood, Philadelphia has rich cultural assets, things experience, and amazing people, and each of them get a beautiful festival.
Brad, what are you looking forward to? You live in Philly. You love this city, man. Yeah. You've been thinking about this for a while. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to game day, World Cup game days, seeing folks from Cote d'Ivoire, Curacao, all these different cultures coming together in Philadelphia, because that's what makes Philadelphia great, right?
Yeah.
And having these other folks come in and experience our different cultures is really exciting to me. Also, Royal Tavern has hot dog.
Oh, yeah.
Royal Tavern's
hot dog. I don't know what this is.
So Royal Tavern every summer does what's called the Dog Days of Summer, and they have different hot dogs like every week. And then at the end of the summer, they have a big hot dog competition where people can submit their own hot dog recipes to get on the menu.
Love Royal Tavern.
So things like that. There's also, there's like a kayak flotilla that is going down the Schuylkill River all the way to Fort Mifflin. Things like that where, you know, it feels like an Only in Philly thing. Like no one is going to, you know, New York isn't doing a kayak flotilla.
That's right.
Down the East River.
Point that out. Thank you so much, Brad Pearson, executive editor of Philadelphia Magazine. And thank you, Michael Newmis, 2026 director for the city of Philadelphia. Coming up next, we go from history celebrations today to actual history. Mm-hmm. We'll bring you an excerpt of our recent live event in Haddonfield, all about the Revolutionary War as it played out in New Jersey. By the way, that is it for our YouTube broadcast today. Radio folks, stick around. You are listening to Studio 2 on WHYY.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. We are going back in time now to 1777, Haddonfield, New Jersey. Over the last year, we've been touring and talking about historic taverns in our region for our Studio 2 Tavern 250 tour.
Before Haddonfield became known for its charming downtown, it was part of New Jersey's origin story. Indian King Tavern, now a museum, was a popular meeting place and the center of a town full of many identities. Quaker families with pacifist beliefs, tavern keepers accused of sedition, and people watching troops march through their streets.
To talk about the Indian King Tavern, we convened before a live audience last week at Kings Road Brewing Company with historian Michelle Hughes. Let's play back some of that conversation about how Haddonfield shaped a government we still recognize today. Let's just talk, Michelle, about where we are, Haddonfield, and how it was established. So before it was established as Haddonfield, what was in this place that we are now?
So that's a great question, because it starts all the way back in 1681. Oh. We are on King's Highway today, but back then it's the Burlington-Salem Road, and it makes a huge crossroads through southern New Jersey here. So 1681, you have a few kind of log cabins sort of popping up, but it isn't until 1701 that Haddonfield really starts to make the map, so to speak. That is when its founder, Elizabeth Haddon, comes over to the colonies, which we still are in 1701. And she comes at the behest of her father, John, who buys a large tract of land that not only becomes Haddonfield, but many of the surrounding towns around it. He sends her, because we're in West New Jersey at the time, and West New Jersey says, we don't want land speculators. We only want settlers who are going to come over. So in his land grant from the king, the land that he purchases, someone has to come over. Well, he's a busy London businessman. So his 21-year-old single daughter comes. Girl power, right?
I was thinking that, Michelle.
Yes. So she comes over with some other family members and some servants, but not her father or not her immediate family. And she starts becoming the property manager for this large tract of land that would become Haddonfield.
Do we know if she had any choice in this? Was she excited to do this? I mean, this sounds very scary. What do we know about her?
So there is a biography on her, and I don't know the answer to that, but I'm going to assume that she was a very strong young female to be willing to even do it. So choice or not, I don't know. She quickly marries a gentleman that she had met over in London over here. He doesn't follow her per se, but they get married over here. And then she does have a partner to help her with this huge endeavor.
Yeah. So this was founded as a largely Quaker community. Could you tell us a little bit about who lived here, what their beliefs were leading up to the revolution?
Absolutely. So South Jersey is basically an offshoot of Philadelphia and Pennsylvania with those Quakers. And so it was founded as a Quaker community. Although not as busy as it is today, Haddonfield does become a market town. Actually, you can see King's Court right across the street from us today was where the market house was in the colonial time period, pre-revolution. So 4 days a week, you would be able to go and buy your bread and your butter and your things across the town in the town center there. But also, there are lots of trades and craftsmen here. The Indian King, before it was the Indian King, was a brewery. Mm-hmm. There were apothecaries and brick makers. My favorite is Thomas Champion in particular, because it's easy to remember what he did. He was a tailor. I always think of Champion sweatshirts.
All right.
So it really is a place that shows up on maps pretty early. And in fact, we have a statewide map from the 1770s that Haddonfield shows up on. So a pretty diverse ethnic population, but predominantly Quaker.
Yeah. How many people were in the region at that time? It sounds like it was a growing area.
It absolutely was growing. And at the outbreak of the American Revolution, there are about 1,000 residents in Haddonfield.
Wow, that's sizable. Mm-hmm. You mentioned West Jersey, so that's not on the map today.
No.
What was that, and why was New Jersey at one point divided between West and East?
Yes.
Because now we think more north-south and maybe central, controversially. But why West-East at one point?
So I love that story because actually New Jersey is founded as a proprietorship, not a colony, as we will think of them at the outbreak of the American Revolution. So we are divided into East and West New Jersey, and the proprietors actually elected their own representatives here on site in New Jersey. And in 1703, things are not going the way that they plan, i.e. they're not making enough moolah. So they petitioned the crown at the time to become a colony like the other 12. And so we sort of dissolve our proprietorship, although they still exist on paper in 2026. And we become a colony with a royal governor just like the other 12. However, initially, where New Jersey's identity crisis begins, we're an afterthought. New York's royal governor can take after New Jersey until they get around to appointing New Jersey one.
Yeah, and so can you tell us a little bit more about the Indian King Tavern and how it became this centerpiece of such, I mean, such important historical events?
Yes, so the Indian King becomes, or the building that is the Indian King today, becomes a tavern in May of 1777. And operates all the way to 1873. It was never the only tavern in Haddonfield, but it was always the largest. It is going to be the place in the colonial era for white males, sadly, to do a ton of their communication, not only for leisure purposes of locals deciding to stop and have a few beers, just like here at the brewery, or travelers coming from further away. King's Highway, or the Burlington-Salem Road, was meant to be a four-lane roadway. This was a major thoroughfare. Mm-hmm. So the Indian King is going to have a mix of locals and travelers who are spreading news to each other. Even though there are newspapers, they come out once or twice a week. It's a vital place to get information, especially during the American Revolution. If we talked about some of those battles before we started the interview, you're going to find about them at the tavern before you're going to read about them in the newspaper, most likely.
So, because I think when most of us think about tavern, you think about getting a beer or a drink. But at that time, and we've talked about this in our past talks a little bit, taverns were really an information space. So it actually made sense that the legislature would sort of decide to meet there.
Exactly. There's no capital yet. There's no capital building. Very few colonies actually had capital buildings. Philadelphia and Pennsylvania and Boston, Massachusetts being the rare survivor, you know, who had capital buildings. So there was not a place for them to inherently be in. Very few communities had courthouses, or, you know, certainly none had municipal buildings. Mm-hmm. So they really are inventing the government while building the plane, so to speak, at the same time. Yeah. We are one of the very first colonies to have a state constitution. We're the fourth. Prior to the Declaration of Independence being signed. So we really are the sort of this testing ground of what they're doing and deciding for the government.
Laboratory for democracy here.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about a non-battle, a.k.a.
Sure.
a skirmish.
Yes. So a battle is when both armies or the enlisted men purposely come in contact with each other.
Okay.
That's a battle.
All right.
A skirmish is when, oopsie, they've run into each other. And so we...
I have to giggle on that one. Okay. So they... All right. They run into each other. How did this happen?
So it could happen in several different ways, but the way that it happens here in and around Haddonfield is after the evacuation of Philadelphia, the British troops, army, occupied Philadelphia for several months. And in June of 1778, they are evacuating the city. George Washington is able to kind of retake over. And so 20,000 British troops are marching by King's Highway here. We can picture that. I don't know that many cars go by today. They're going to be sending off groups to look ahead, to forage for some food. And so they're going to be small bands of 20, 30 soldiers. Well, they're out in areas that they don't know, but the local militias know very well. And so when those troops are kind of detached off from that 20,000 troop marching, the local militias are going to harass them. And that's exactly what George Washington told them to do. He wrote to the local militia and said, just harass them as they're going along. And they continue through South Jersey all the way up until a freehold, until they reach what would become the Battle of Monmouth.
So Haddonfield, how are we celebrating 250 around here? What are the big events?
So Haddonfield is going to celebrate the 250th really big. The event that I'm most closely associated with is the Haddonfield Skirmish, which happens June 6th this year. And we will reenact one of those skirmishes that we talked about when the British and the militia accidentally come upon each other.
So it's going to be a lot of yelling and...
A lot of yelling, a lot of musket firing, artisan demonstrators, some great food and beer. If you haven't been to a reenactment or you haven't been to one in a downtown, it's definitely one to check out. But also Haddonfield is having artisans demonstrating every Saturday across the street in King's Court there.
And that was historian Michelle Hughes, a resource interpretive specialist for the state of New Jersey. You just heard her talk about the Haddonfield skirmish there. The reenactment is happening this Saturday on King's Highway with tavern tours all day. You can expect a lot of colonial dancing, a yelling contest, and of course, a scuffle with the Redcoats.
And now it's time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Al, hit it.
At the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars.
That is Marvin Gaye singing a spellbinding rendition of the Star Spangled Banner at the 1983 NBA All-Star Game.
Wow, thank you to Lawrence for choosing that song and for being our DJ of the day. And so I also have to say thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel Mae Bryan, and Paige Murray Bessler. Chef Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.